I believe we probably all have seen eclipses. You probably have all seen a solar eclipse. Hopefully you didn't try to look at it straight with your eyes. That's not good. But we've all seen at least video of solar eclipses. When we have a solar eclipse, we understand the moon comes between us and the sun, and it throws a shadow upon the earth. We see that in the physical realm. In our journey of faith, there can be times of spiritual eclipses as well upon our lives. In Genesis chapter 16, Abraham experienced such a time. Now, it's noteworthy that this occurred after the record of a mountaintop experience in Abraham's life. We saw that last week. God had come again to Abraham and said, "Abraham, you will have a son, and your descendants will be as many as the stars." And Abraham had said, I don't have a child. Do you mean I am to adopt basically my chief of staff, my manager of all my estates? That would have been the custom at the time. And he will be my descendant. No, Abraham, it will be of your own body. It will be your DNA. And I will give you and the descendants this land. Wow, what a promise. And yet, as we've seen before also, it's not unusual for a believer to experience a valley of hardship, maybe of doubt, confusion, despair, after a glorious mountaintop experience. And this is true here with Abraham. Abraham is going to compromise his faith in this chapter. And Abraham's compromise eclipsed his faith in God. Let's notice, first of all, Abraham's eclipsed faith. That's found in the first six verses, which we read this morning. Let me just give you an overview of the account, shall we? Then we'll look at it in more detail. First of all, there was a problem. Sarah was still barren. She had no son. They had been 10 years in the land. God had said, "You will have a son." No son. "You will have a son." No son. I'm sure Abraham came back to Sarah after this experience and said, "God appeared to me again. He said, we're going to have children as many as the stars of heaven, as descendants. He has promised us a son as well as the land." And maybe they were excited and said, "Okay, it's going to be now." But Sarah didn't get pregnant. And Sarah didn't get pregnant. Now, we know Sarah was 75 years old at this time. And we would say, "Well, no wonder she didn't get pregnant. She's 75 years old." But understand, she's only lived about half of her life. People back then lived a lot longer, so it's not per se her age, although that's beginning to have an effect. It's just that all of her married life, they've been barren, no child. That was the problem. So Sarah comes up with a suggestion. "Can't you see her saying to Abraham?" Now, Abraham, exactly what did God say? He said, "You're going to have a son." Did he say it was going to be by me? No, he didn't say exactly that. "Well, then maybe it will not be mine, but it will still be yours. Why not take a secondary wife and have a child by her, and we will raise it as our son?" And then we see a compromise because Abraham listened to his wife. Now, guys, we probably should listen to our wives a lot more than we do. But this was a case where he shouldn't have listened to his wife. But he does listen to his wife, sleeps with Hagar, and she becomes pregnant. And then we see the consequences. The family's now torn with strife. Hagar despises Sarah because, "Hey, you couldn't have a baby, but I can." Sarah gets madder than a little wet hen, as we used to say on the farm, because now she sees what's happening and she's mad and she takes it out on Abraham, forgetting it was her suggestion. "See what you have done." And Abraham doesn't take the headship. He just basically backs off and says, "I'm not getting involved in this catfight. You take care of it." And Hagar ends up running away. That's how far we've gotten in the story. Let's learn some lessons. which we can learn here. And the main lesson is not just that, men, we don't have a second wife, okay? There are other lessons that we have here. Lesson number one, our timing is not always God's timing. Now, Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. At this point in Abraham's life, the couple had been waiting for years and years. They had probably seen back in Ur, they'd probably seen family have children. They had seen over the years friends have children. They had seen their servants have children. And they had waited and waited, and no pregnancy. And Sarah begins to say, why not? God has restrained me from having a son. She's kind of saying, God, it's your fault. I mean, you're in control. Why haven't you given me the son? But God's perfect timetable had not come yet. You see, God has a perfect timetable for what he wants to do. In Abraham's case here, this event of the birth of this son, which will later be Isaac, was not just any baby. It was God's part of God's plan for salvation, because through this would eventually come Messiah, Jesus Christ. And Isaac would be a beautiful picture of Jesus in many ways, in his birth and as later as we're going to see, miraculous birth, but later in a picture of Jesus' death and resurrection. And even in his marriage, a picture of Christ's marriage to the church. All of this God has in plan, and God has a perfect time. Sarah gets impatient, though. It needs to be now. Before we shake our heads, doesn't she remind us of us? We need to learn to wait on God. We live in an instant society. We want instant gratification. I go in and I want a popcorn. I remember as a boy, you had the popcorn popper and all the different stuff, and eventually you got the popcorn. Now you have the microwave. You pop it in about 2 minutes, you have popcorn. But I sit there going, half a minute, come on, minute. Aren't you ever going to be, oh, you're getting the pop now. Are you ever going to get done? We come up to a stop sign. Is that light ever going to change? We turn on our computer. Are you going to boot up or not? Come on. I see people at the store. We have our credit card reader. And now, you know, it used to be that you swiped your card. No, you don't do that hardly anymore. Now you insert your card. I mean, you don't it's getting to the point you don't do that. Now you tap your card. But now that's new. And people are there going, when is it going to come? When is it going to read it? And they keep doing that. And finally, when the machine, which is a little bit slow, and I keep telling them, the machine's a little slow, because they'll take it and they'll already be putting it in their pocket. It hasn't read it yet. Or they keep tapping it. Now the machine finally begins to read it, and it's going, the machine can't understand it. And it just, start over. We are impatient. We want what we want, and we want it when? Say it with me. Now. Sarah wanted it now. God, I want this. I want to be patient, Lord. Can I be patient now? You know, one thing you probably never should pray God for is patience. Because we learn patience through what? Trials. You want to be patient? God's going to send trials into your life. It's better to say, Lord, as I have trials, may help me to be patient. We learn from the Bible, Isaiah 40, verse 31. But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. And they shall walk and not faint. Lord, teach me to wait. Help me to wait. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. Wait on the Lord. But we don't want to wait. You see, our timetable is not always God's timetable, but God's timing is the perfect time. Second lesson, our past sins can trouble our future. And she had an Egyptian maidservant whose name was Hagar. Hagar is clearly said to be what? Egyptian. Where in the world did they get an Egyptian maidservant? Egypt. We're reminded that about 9 years or so before, right after they'd gotten into the land, and they were trusting God, but what happened? A famine came. Remember we went over this? The famine came, and instead of trusting God, Abraham thought and figured it out himself, and logically he said, there's food down in Egypt, it's a famine here, let's move down to Egypt. So they moved down to Egypt. Mistake number one, he didn't trust God. Didn't ask God. Got down to Egypt. Mistake number two, he said about Sarah, his wife, she's my sister. Why? They may kill me to take her as wife. So he said, she's my sister. Sure enough, Sarah is a knockout, beautiful woman. And the servants of Pharaoh, the king, tell Pharaoh about her. And Pharaoh says, well, I'd like to have her as part of my harem. And so he treats Abraham well for her. He gives Abraham many gifts, among which were servants, slaves. And Abraham got in all kinds of trouble and was embarrassed because he had lied and got kicked out of Egypt. God preserved and took care of Sarah and got them out of Egypt. But when they came out of Egypt, they brought Sarah with them, or excuse me, brought Hagar with them. They'd either bought her in Egypt or more likely they had gotten her as a gift from Pharaoh. Now years have passed. And Sarah comes up with this plan. But think with me, if Abraham had never doubted God, if Abraham had relied upon God and never gone down to Egypt, if he had not lied about his wife, they never would have had Hagar as part of their encampment to be a temptation at this time. You see, past sins in our lives, even though we deal with them and maybe we've been forgiven because of God and everything else, but they still can weaken us as far as future battles are concerned. So when we face a temptation right now, it's not just, well, what is this going to affect me now, but how is it going to affect me next year and years down the road? How is it going to affect my family because of what I do today? Thirdly, sometimes even the most well-meaning advice may not be according to God's will. So Sarai said to Abram, see now, the Lord has restrained me from bearing children. Please go into my maid. Perhaps I shall obtain children by her. What? Husbands, can you ever imagine your wife saying to you, well, I can't have children. Go ahead and marry somebody else so we can have kids. Wives, would you ever say that to your husband? But we don't understand the culture of the time. The most disgraceful thing for a woman in that culture was not to have children if you were married. It was as if God, or the pagans would say, the gods were angry at you. God is mad and won't let you have kids. It's a constant disgrace. And so she wants children so bad, she can taste it so bad, she'll even make this offer to Abraham. Now, may I say, Sarah meant well. She was thinking of Abraham and the fulfillment of the promise as well, and she was even willing to sacrifice her husband's sole attention, let him have sexual relations with another woman. But she was wrong. Sarah was second-guessing God. And you know, that's always dangerous. No one else could have approached Abraham with that suggestion and had the slightest hope of happening, but she could. The biggest problem throughout all this discussion is, again, no one asked God about it. God, is this what you mean? No. Abraham left God out of the equation. Again, he falls back on his human reasoning. May I say, it is good to listen to the advice of others. The book of Proverbs tells us we should ask advice from wise people. But we need to weigh that advice carefully. We need to always compare that advice to God's will. And if it does not equal out with the Bible, If it's not according to what we feel is God's will, no matter what our best friend says, what our spouse says, what our everybody else says around us, no matter how much they care for us and are trying to help us, don't listen to it unless it's from God. A fourth lesson: just because something is legally or socially acceptable doesn't make it right. And Abram heeded the voice of Sarai. Then Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, and gave her to her husband Abram to be his wife, after Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan. Let's think about here a couple things. First of all, Abraham was a strict monogamist. One wife. But you know, that was kind of unusual for those times. It was not unusual for men to have two or three wives if they were wealthy, to even have a harem. Abraham was different. Nope. He understood biblical idea. One man, one woman, one lifetime. Nope. One wife. But these were straining times. She can't have a son. So there was a legal custom, legal and a custom of that culture, that permitted a husband of a childless wife to take her servant as a secondary wife, kind of like a concubine. One biblical scholar put it this way: the child born of that union was regarded as the first wife's child. If the husband said to the slave wife's son, "You are my son," then he was the adopted son and heir. So not only was he saying, well, culturally you can have more than one wife. No, I don't want to do that. Sarah's my love. I will not do that. That's not God's will. But also when she comes up with this idea, well, take my maidservant. He goes, well, you know, that's according to the laws and the customs of my people. And while that custom might have been socially and legally acceptable, God often repudiates social traditions. The plan was wrong. It was wrong from its very beginning because it violated the very biblical marriage principle God had laid down at the beginning, what we'd say Genesis chapter 1. One man for one woman for one lifetime. That was how it was in the Garden of Eden. It was Adam and Eve, not Adam and Eve and Burnett and Sarah and this, that, and the other. One wife, one husband. It's interesting, as we continue through this story, it appears God never really accepted Hagar as Abraham's second wife. Later on, we're going to see that the angel of the Lord appears to her, and he calls her Sarah's maid. He doesn't call her Abraham's wife, but Sarah's maid. God rejected the entire enterprise because he had something better in plan in mind for Abraham and Sarah. What about us today? Today, many things are socially, perhaps even legally acceptable, which we should not follow because they are not according to the standards of Almighty God. Oh, 10, 12 years back, David Jeremiah wrote a book, I Never Thought I'd See the Day, or I Never Thought It Would Happen. You know, I can say that. 64 years old now. I look back when I was a teenager, and imagine, you know, that was back in the 70s. Things were going on, but there were things then that, you know, I would see, well, that will never happen. It's socially acceptable to believe homosexuality is fine, and homosexual marriages are fine, and that's even legal. But it's wrong because that's not what the Bible says. Living with other people and having premarital sex, socially acceptable, but that doesn't mean it's right. Having affairs, well, everybody's doing it, that doesn't mean it's right. Well, my boss doesn't take care of me, so it's okay for me to steal from the company. Everybody is. That doesn't make it right. Even if it's socially acceptable and it's legally acceptable, that doesn't make it right. We take it to God and His Word to decide what's right and what's wrong. And right is right even if nobody's doing it, and wrong is wrong even if everybody's doing it. Fifthly, even the most logical plan may end in disaster. So he went in to Hagar, and she conceived, and when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress became despised in her, Hagar's, eyes. Then Sarai said to Abram, my wrong be upon you. I gave my maid into your embrace, and when she saw that she had conceived, I became despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between you and me. So Abram said to Sarai, indeed, your maid is in your hand. Do to her as you please. And when she dealt harshly with her, she fled from her presence. Now, at first, it may have seemed to Abraham and Sarah that their plans were fine and everything was working out right. I mean, after all, Hagar became pregnant. They're going to have a son. But then the natural consequences of their own endeavors began to occur. The Scottish novelist George MacDonald was right when he said, in whatever man does without God, he must fail miserably or succeed more miserably. They think, we've succeeded. Oh man, here comes misery. Hagar despises Sarah. She showed contempt. The idea here is that in her eyes, Sarah was small, insignificant, trifling, dishonorable. Again, the people in the Near Eastern culture thought barren women were worthless to society. They can't have a baby. They're not even worth the food they're eating. That was the thought of the time. So according to ancient standards, Hagar, the servant, really was of a higher social status than Sarah, the mistress, because Hagar could have a son and Sarah couldn't. Didn't take Hagar long to begin to think that way. Her feelings of superiority must have been evident to everybody in the encampment. And Sarah realized my plan backfired, and she is furious. Does she blame herself? No, she blames Abraham. He should have known better, and yes, he should have. Chuck Swindoll wrote this. All of a sudden, this once harmonious home had become a combat zone. People who used to trust God and wait upon his blessings started using his name to call down curses upon one another. Hagar, who used to respect Sarai, began to feel superior and became insolent. Then, when Abram and Sarai were at odds, Sarai found herself abruptly expendable. Hagar couldn't stand the mounting pressure and fled into the wilderness alone. Life was certainly messy in that home. And boy, was it ever. Why? Because they were out of the perfect will of God. And instead of repenting, instead of seeking God's guidance in the situation, each of them went their own way. Sarah's solution was to blame her husband and mistreat her servant as she gave vent to her anger. Abraham's solution was to give in to his wife and abdicate the spiritual leadership of his home. Hagar's solution was to run away from the problem. Boy, don't we often run away from our problems or try to? One more overarching lesson here. God does not need our advice or our help to accomplish his plans. God, it's not working the way I think it to, but let me tell you, Lord, I'm educated or I'm experienced. I've gone through life. I know what should be done. So God, listen to me. Let me give you some advice. Or God, let me help you out to accomplish this. No. The wise writer of Proverbs said in chapter 3, verses 5 through 6, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths. Abraham didn't understand. I mean, he's 85, Sarah's 75, there's no children. But the point is, God was waiting until it was physically impossible for them to have children before he'd give them children. They're saying, Lord, how long? The book of Hebrews chapter 11 verse 12 says that God wanted Abraham and Sarah to be physically as good as dead before they had children. So when people looked at it, they said, well, it's a miraculous baby. They couldn't have it. There's no way. And then the baby comes on the scene. Right now we find Abraham still can have children. He does with Hagar, so it wasn't God's time yet. You need to wait, Abraham, but I don't want to wait. Let me give you my advice. Let me help you out. No, do it my way. Let's be honest. I know it's hard, especially as we grow impatient, to wait on God. But we need to. We must wait on God and not run ahead of Him in our lives. But Pastor, doesn't the Bible say that God helps those who help themselves? No, it doesn't. Read it through in any translation. Look it up in the concordance. It does not say that. That's something Benjamin Franklin said, not the Bible. God doesn't help those who help themselves. God helps those who depend on Him. Sometimes we hear that we should do something, anything, even if it's wrong, at least do something. You ever hear that? That's not good advice. It's better to do nothing than to do something that God doesn't want you to do. We must wait on God. We must listen for His leading. We must follow His word. And we must trust Him to direct us throughout our lives. The rest of the chapter, we see God's marvelous grace. We saw here Abraham. We saw his eclipsed faith. But now let's quickly notice God's marvelous grace. The Bible tells us in Romans chapter 5, verse 20, but where sin abounded, grace abounded much more. Praise God, God's grace abounds. Notice God's grace to Hagar. She's run away. God Himself meets with Hagar. Now the angel of the Lord found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, by the spring on the way to Shur. And he said, Hagar, Sarai's maid, where have you come from and where are you going? Hagar is met here by a mysterious person, the angel of the Lord. And notice, Lord, it's all in capitals. Capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D. That means Yahweh, Jehovah, the personal name of God, the angel, the messenger of Jehovah. Now, the road to Shur was a caravan route used by merchants traveling from Canaan down to Egypt. What's Hagar doing? She's going back home. I'm going back to my homeland, the land of Egypt. Her flight's interrupted by this mysterious person called the messenger. And notice it is the angel of the Lord, not an angel of the Lord. He will appear many times throughout the pages of the Old Testament. The angel of the Lord wrestles with Jacob in Genesis chapter 32. He is said by Jacob to have redeemed him in Genesis 48. The angel of the Lord speaks to Moses from the burning bush, Exodus 3. The angel of the Lord went before the nation of Israel and led them to the land of Canaan, Exodus 14 and 23. The angel of the Lord commissioned Gideon, Judges chapter 6. The angel of the Lord announced the birth of Samson, Judges 13. And in each of these cases, there's a special relationship between that messenger and God Himself. Indeed, as we look at it more closely, the evidence is very strong that this angel is the Lord Jesus Christ appearing before Bethlehem. In verse number 13, he's called the Lord, and Hagar recognized him and called him the God who sees me. This is Jesus coming and speaking to this girl. The fact that the Son of God took on a temporary body, left heaven, came to earth to help a rejected servant girl reveals the extent of His love, His mercy, and His grace to this woman. God then directs her back to the safety of Abraham's camp. She said, I am fleeing from the presence of my mistress Sarai. The angel of the Lord said to her, return to your mistress, submit yourself under her hand. She goes, but she's being so mean. Yes, but he's basically saying return. He's implying God will watch over you. God will protect you and bless you. I'll take care of it. And then, amazingly, he promised her abundant descendants. And the angel of the Lord said to her, I will multiply your descendants exceedingly so that they shall not be counted for multitude. Remind you of what he even said to Abraham? The Middle East is full of her descendants. We usually refer to them today as Arabs. And God appears to here, appears to become her own personal God. Then she called the name of the Lord who spoke to her, "You are the God who sees." For she said, "Here, have I also been seen him who sees me?" Therefore the well was called Beer Lahairoi. Observe, it is between Kadesh and Bered. She understands that this is more than just some mysterious being. This is God. God has seen her predicament. God cares for her. And so she called him the God who sees. Now, this is interesting. The original construction of this phrase can be understood to include a secondary meaning that not only has God seen her in her need, but in manifesting himself to her as the angel, he could be seen. Hagar is expressing surprise that God himself has come. To put it another way, she asks, "Have I also seen him who sees me?" To put it more simply, she's saying, "Am I still alive after seeing God?" And others who saw the angel of the Lord said the same thing later on. She knew that God had seen her. She knew that God, although she was a rebel and a runaway servant, that God cared. And she acknowledged who he was, and he was personally interested in her. And from that time on, this well had a new meaning. Beer Lahairoi, meaning the well of the one who lives and sees me. And so she obeyed the angel of the Lord and returned to Abraham and Sarah. But she went back, I think, a changed woman, having placed her faith in the true God. The Lord sent her back to the same tense situation, but she now had a new faith, a new hope, and a new message from God, and undoubtedly she told Abraham what had happened. We see God's grace to the boy that's going to be born, Ishmael. And the angel of the Lord said to her, "Behold, you are with child, and you shall bear a son. You shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord has heard your affliction. He shall be a wild man. His hand shall be against every man, and every man's hand against him, and he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren." Ishmael. Ishmael means God hears. Every time she said, "Ishmael, come here. Ishmael, it's time for supper. Ishmael, it's time for bed," she's reminded, "God heard me. God hears." Hagar's son is said to be a wild man, or basically a wild donkey of a man. Now, in our society, that's rather a contemptuous term. You don't want to call somebody a donkey or be called a donkey, do you? And there's another way of saying that, but we won't go into it. We don't like that. But it's not derogatory in that culture. You see, the image describes the free life of a tent-dwelling nomad. The wild donkey here was a beautiful, a swift animal of the desert. And when fully grown, could neither be caught or tamed. She's saying, your descendants are going to be a strong, wild people who love the wilderness, who resist confinement of city life. But they have a great future. You see, while Ishmael would not be Abraham's heir to the blessings of the covenant, that would be Isaac, Ishmael would still enjoy blessings from God since he was Abraham's son. God showed grace. And in closing, may I say God showed grace to Abraham as well. So Hagar bore Abram a son, and Abram named his son whom Hagar bore Ishmael. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bore Ishmael to Abram. God gave Abraham a healthy son to raise. And I think he had a lot of joy in Ishmael. God would forgive Abraham's compromise. And later on, we see in the next chapter, he says, "Abraham, Ishmael's not the son of promise. You're still going to have that son of promise, and he will have Isaac." And although Abraham's faith was eclipsed for a short time, it was not extinguished. Let's leave with this lesson. Even when our faith is eclipsed, God's marvelous grace is still there. When we see a solar eclipse, the sun hasn't gone anyplace. There's just a shadow falling on our world. When our spiritual lives, we experience an eclipse of our faith. God hasn't gone anywhere. We're just experiencing an eclipse. We need to get right with God, and He's there with His marvelous grace to take us back and to bring us forward. Let's learn the lessons Abraham needed to learn. And let's go forward in faith. Let's stand. And we will, let's end our time together with a song, "Just As I Am." If you don't know the God of Abraham, the Jesus Christ of the New Testament, you can. It's simply by faith. Be with you, be ever, always before you, and lead you in your past. You are dismissed.